said, be brave, my son, I'll be home soon. The boy held on to hope till he got that awful news. And as they folded up the stars and stripes, 21 guns pointed towards the sky. As the shots rang out, he flinched a little each time. Then a soldier in his best dress walked up to him, and you know the rest.
Operation Encore is a 501c nonprofit that is helping veterans turn into rock stars every single day. You can learn more about what Operation Encore is doing by going over to their website at www.operationencore.org. That is www.operationencore.org. If you can give them a hand, just click that little donate button or follow all of their social medias and learn exactly what they are doing to change the lives of our veterans every single day. Hey, welcome everybody to Spirits and Stories. I'm your host, Donald Dunn. I'm glad y'all are here today. So, a lot of you know we've got a lot of projects that go under my nonprofit, and one of them is a author's program to help veterans get their books published. I have just recently published my first book, and so I love having authors on the show. They can always teach you stuff, even if they've never been in the military. There's an industry out there that creative and fun. So today we have Miss Juliet Rose. She is an author. By the time she was 10 years old, Juliet Rose knew she wanted to be a writer. She entertained neighborhood kids with her stories after school, and with the support of her mother, got her first typewriter. Life had other plans, and after the death of her mother, when Juliet was 11, she put those dreams on hold. Over the decades, she has picked up the proverbial pen time and again, writing about her life experiences, including the cancer diagnosis and subsequent passing of her four-year-old daughter. Focusing on fiction currently, she is driven to bring to life characters from many walks of life and the struggles faced in modern society. Her writing style is open and fluid, giving the characters the ability to shine and the truth of their own story. Her works are honest and sometimes brutally painful, but in the end, her characters are given the voice which needs to be heard. Juliet is a New York native living in the mountains of Georgia, an area I know very well. She has lived all over the United States and Mexico and doesn't plan to stop seeing the world beyond her front doorstep. She spends her time rescuing animals, painting, and writing. Her dream is to get an RV to explore hidden gems and find the best vegan restaurants. Let's bring on Miss Juliet Rose. Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
I am doing amazing. So why don't we start? Let's give everybody a little bit of a background. Did you grow up in Georgia or did you move to Georgia?
I moved to Georgia. So, as a teenager, I had actually gone to a camp, like a mountain camp in the mountains of North Carolina, and we would come into Georgia all the time, and I just loved it. So as an adult, you know, my ex-husband was military. We had moved all over the country. He moved to being in the Guard, and so we were able to choose where we wanted to live, and we chose Georgia at the time. We've since split up, but, you know, we chose it just like, I really love the mountains of Georgia. I think they're gorgeous. I love the temperature. Yeah. Like, I'm a New Yorker, but I hate the cold. So that's how I ended up here.
Well, I'm actually, my wife and kids are up there in the Savannah area. So they're not too far.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell everybody a little bit, where did you get the passion for writing? Did that just come natural or I know it's been like that since you was a child.
It was, you know, I was an avid reader as a child and I love to tell stories. So like I would, you know, tell stories, be walking home from the bus stop and the kids would be like, you know, tell us something. And initially I always joked that it started out as a truth and I would turn it into a lie. So maybe I would say, oh, you know, this weekend we went to somewhere, and then I would just embellish. mm-hmm. the point where it was no longer the truth. And they always loved it. They would ask me to tell stories and sometimes come to the backyard and sit with me and I would tell stories. And so then I put the two together. I was like, oh, I love reading, which is a written story. And I love telling stories. I could be a writer. And so I went and told my mom and she was really supportive.
Are you ready to experience the power of military community right from the comfort of your living room? Introducing Military United Podcast Streams, now available on the Roku channel. Get ready to dive into a world of incredible stories, inspiring discussions, and the best entertainment the military community has to offer. With our veteran podcast host, you'll gain insights into the experiences that have shaped our heroes. And that's not all. We've got a lineup of talented veteran musicians playing rock, country, and more. Get ready to rock out with these incredible artists who have served our country and are now ready to entertain you with their soulful tunes. But wait, there's more. We've also got veteran comedians who will have you in stitches with their hilarious and relatable stories. Laughter is the best medicine, and these brave men and women know how to deliver it. So gather your loved ones, grab some popcorn, and prepare for an unforgettable journey into the world of military podcasts, music, and comedy. With Military United Podcast Streams now on Roku, you can access all this incredible content with just a few clicks of a button. Military United Podcast Streams on Roku channel. It's time to honor, entertain, and celebrate the incredible men and women who have served our country. Join us today and experience the power of the military community like never before.
Yeah, I mean, I love the creative side too. You know, like I said, I just released my first book, and it's more of about my time in the military and PTSD and that type of stuff. But I have just recently started a fiction book. And when I came across your bio, I thought it was fascinating because, as well, you know, in my fiction book, I pull from my life experiences to kind of give it the context. Not necessarily the stories are true, but the context of how the characters would do things came from my life experiences. So I have found that it is easier to write fiction than it is about yourself. That was hard to get through.
Yeah, for sure. I've done both. I used to write for magazines, for articles, for newspapers, things like that. I wrote a lot more nonfiction in my 20s. And then my daughter was diagnosed and passed away in my 20s. And so then I shifted to writing a lot about kind of that experience, nonfiction, mm-hmm. so cancer, because I was trying to reach other parents, reach people that were going through things. Then I took a break for a while because it really burned me out, like reliving those experiences over and over again. I just got to the point where I didn't want to. And so I didn't write for 15 years. And then I came back to it once my other children were grown.
Yeah, man, I'm sorry. That I can't even imagine. I got two kids. They're both grown now. But and in honesty, I'm going through a cancer diagnosis with my daughter right now. It's not. It is scary. I don't think it's going to be, I think everything will be okay, but, I can relate in that aspect, but I cannot relate in the loss of a child. So I'm sorry. That is probably,
you know, as a parent, we think we're going to, even the cancer diagnosis, you don't think that's going to happen to your child. You know, you kind of prepare yourself for things mentally, like this might happen. I'm getting older. You just really don't think it's going to happen to your child. And you're so helpless because you can't fix it for them. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That I can relate to. It's tough. I've said that a lot this week, but, so let's dig into a little bit of the books. You have won like over 40 awards with your books. And I was kind of going through your website and looking at, some of these awards and, let's dig into, I'm assuming they're in order. Is the latest book, the one at the top, Do Over, is that your latest book?
It's the other way around. That was my first. And so if you scroll down, the By the Dimming Light is my latest book.
Okay. So let's dig into that book. Where did the motivation or the drive come from for writing this book?
For By the Dimming Light?
Yeah.
Yeah. So my daughter, Braylon, she lives with me. She's an adult. She has like a house on our property. She was pet sitting for somebody in the neighborhood. And I had to walk her back there one night so she could go and, you know, make sure the animals were okay. But she was going to stay the night. So I walked with her And where the road split off, she would go up the hill towards that house. And then I would wait, see if she got to the top of the hill, and I would try to go home. And so she'd flash her light at me. I'm at the top of the hill. I go home, say, hey, let me know when you're inside. And then part of me was like, what happens if somebody was waiting at the top of the hill? Because I have this whole like paranoia thing. And so that story really came out of that, because in the story, this guy and his girlfriend live in the same neighborhood in a town in Kentucky. You know, this is back in the 80s. Same thing. He walks her to the street. She goes up, flashes her light, and he goes home. A couple hours later, gets a call from her mother that she's missing. And so he runs over there. They end up finding that she was murdered in the woods. And so that was the initial part of that story. And then it goes into like, it jumps forward then like, you know, 15 years, 13 years later. He's a raging alcoholic. He has a lot of guilt, you know, still living at home with his parents. Or his mother's passed away, but with his father, taking care of his father, just really tortured soul kind of thing. And then it kind of goes from there. It gets into some different things. But that's really where it came from, was, you know, we as humans tend to think, and this kind of gets into this, that there's monsters out there that are supernatural, that are going to get us, when really a lot of the monsters are other humans. And so, like, I really wanted to address, like, he sees something in the wood. It's a creature. He's convinced it killed his girlfriend. He goes hunting it. But a lot of it is him learning to deal with all of it, the grief, the guilt, you know, the memories, and come to a place where he understands what's really going on. And so that was the motivation for that one.
Wow. It is. You said something that just hit me, because in my book, I mentioned that the world has to be balanced. You have to have good and you have to have evil to keep that flow going. You can't have happy without sad. You know, you've got to have these opposites. And the one of the things that I mentioned in there is that I do believe in evil, because I have a hard time believing that a human, without being motivated by something truly evil down to your soul, could make you do some of the things that I've seen. And so I choose to believe that, because I would rather believe that people genuinely in their soul have some sort of care. You know, it doesn't mean you can't be a dick, but right, you do at least care. You don't have that desire to kill and do some of these things that we see in the world. And so it's funny that you mentioned how as we believe in the supernatural of the monsters, you know, part of that could just be we don't want to believe that it's a human being that can just make that decision to decide, I just want to take a life today. And
absolutely. And that's what I was wanting to address, was that, you know, I also like to believe in the goodness of people, that people in general are good and they wouldn't do these things. But at the same point, we tend to put our heads in the sand that in that line of thinking that they couldn't be so horrible to do these things, but we know they happen. So, you know, I wanted to really address why it's easier for us to think there's a monster in the woods than to think, you know, somebody in my neighborhood and somebody in my town is sadistic, you know?
Yeah. I mean, so let me ask you, with publishing, are you self-published or do you go through a publisher?
I'm self-published now. So I had in 2020, basically I had started writing, and then 2021 I had sent out and I had gotten 3 contracts. The first one, they published a folder during COVID. So no fault of their own. They were new and it was just too much. So they folded. Second one sent me a contract and it was really sketchy. Like, it had clauses in there that would actually give them right to like future creativity and then block it if they didn't want it. And I was like, yeah, no. Third one I signed a contract on. And then during this time, my book was supposed to come out with them last year. He just quit communicating with his authors, quit paying royalties. So much so that we actually started a group, had to get the Authors Guild involved, or a legal group that helps authors, and have them write termination letters for breach of contract to this publisher, which we've slowly been getting our rights back. After that third one, I was like, that's it. I know what I'm doing. I can do this. And so I went indie at that point.
Yeah. I haven't been on the other side of that, but I think I think I work better with myself. I don't know that I work well with others.
Doesn't play well with others.
No. So I agree. I think in today's world, between podcasting, writing, music, I think there is a huge market share that the indie person can pull for themselves.
For sure.
You know, it used to be a locked door and you had to be invited through the gateway with one of the big three. And the music industry was the same way. It still kind of is. But, you know, the news, you had to get your news from a major network or a major newspaper. Now there's some good people out there that are providing good news podcasting. And
right.
So I think the world is slowly changing to that. And I think that is an amazing thing because you're going to get more in tune with the person. I think your readers being self-published is going to learn a little bit more about you because you have to kind of put yourself out there a little bit more with promotions and all that type of stuff as well. So I think that is, I think that's a good thing. You know, have you kind of seen that same experience or?
I have. And it's interesting because like in my, I guess, early 30s, I published a book and this was back, you know, many years ago. Anyway, and I put it out there and I did all the work and I published it myself. And then I remember like marketing and the there was stigma about being self-published. Like people now say, oh, are you self-published? I say, yeah. They're like, okay, cool. Back then they would say that. And then you would see them like cringe, step away. You know, like they just were convinced that if it was self-published that it couldn't be good. And so when I came back to it this time and I decided to go indie again, that was why I started entering awards contests because I was like, I need that kind of second vetting to show them that, in fact, it is good because I didn't want that stigma. And then I started winning awards. But honestly, even outside of the awards, people's ideas have changed because everything's so much more accessible to us. You know, we listen to music that's indie. We see people selling art at art festivals. We, you know, writers. So, like, I think the mentality is changing. Maybe much to the chagrin of like the big five, because I don't think they really want the competition of indies, but here we are.
Yeah. And I think also people, they're becoming more untrustworthy of the mainstream media. And so I think people are kind of searching for that because they want the old style information back. They want somebody that's providing the information, not a decision. And I think
with the consumer that control too, because they get to choose to read something instead of waiting for someone to tell them what they should read.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, because before you couldn't get your books in Barnes and Nobles and on these, that shelf space was tough to get to. Yeah. And now with e-reading and everything else, again, I think the one form of people that have really benefited the most from this is comedians. That was a really tough branch to get into.
Okay.
Because you had to know somebody. But with the internet and TikTok and these reels and shorts and everything else, now when people go to places to perform, people have seen them on the internet and buy the tickets to go see the shows because they've seen some of the material. So I think that helped them out tremendously. I wish there was like a fast reading reel or something where we could put portions of our books and show.
Well, you know, something I do actually is on TikTok. I will just read from my book. You know, I'll just take a chapter and I'll just read it because it's an introduction. They get to know me. I get a lot of views on those too. Like say if I post something that's maybe a picture of one of the books with some information versus when I do the reading, I get way more views on the reading. So people are definitely interested in hearing that. And it does introduce the book to them. So then they can say, oh, that sounds like something I'd like to read.
That is awesome. I never thought about that. That is really cool.
Yeah, it was hard at first, but I'm getting better at it.
I believe it. I may. So like all the authors that are part of our program, I buy all their books. So I may start doing that a little bit as well, just to help promote their books. Cause that's a really good idea.
Yeah. And you don't have to read a lot. I mean, you can just read a little snippet, but it helps get the reader a feeling for the story, maybe what it's about, but even the flow or the pacing, because then they're like, oh, that I like the way that's written, you know? So I think it's good. And like I said, it was tough. I every time I do it, I literally try to film it probably 30 times before I'm happy with how my voice sounds and how I'm reading my stuff. But, you know, like even with the mistakes, because sometimes I'll just be like, whatever, I'm just going to go ahead and put it up. People love it. So like, it is a way to bring like that. You were saying like with the comedians or with musicians, if we read our work, it's also us, you know, like, and they're getting to see the author a little bit deeper, and that people are always interested in that backstory.
Yeah, I think, see, that's why I bring on all the really smart guests, because
that's me. I'm
really smart. I don't know these things. So you've been writing for a long time now, and we discussed that you started out with nonfiction, you've gone to fiction. Which one do you think is the hardest? Do you think the nonfiction is harder than fiction?
Yeah, I mean, nonfiction is harder because it's, you have to be accurate. Like, you, there's no creative license in nonfiction. You have to be correct in what you're writing about. It tends to also be somewhat, I think for me at least, was more personal. So it was like, it was hard to dig that out of me and do that. Now with fiction, I tend to do a lot of truth in fiction as well. Kind of like we were talking about that, like where we are drawing out our experiences or things like that. So I still try to put that in there, and I do a lot of research, but I still feel like the flow is much easier. I'm not having to really like pick apart every sentence to say, is this accurate? Is this the way it needs to be? Like I did with nonfiction.
Yeah, I completely agree. I am definitely on the fiction is easier than the nonfiction. And for the same reasons, when I was writing this book about myself, man, I had to be like a third person, and I felt like I was judging myself.
Yeah.
And, but you have to be that way. You have to, like you said, you to get down to the truth, not how you feel, but what was the truth about what happened? It's important that you can do that. I don't think I could have ever done that without have gone through some group therapy and dealt with some of my issues prior, because man, it was pain. It took me a year and a half to write this book because I put it down so many times just because I didn't want to keep going. You know, things was getting tough, and I don't have those issues with fiction, man. Once I sit down and everything's quiet around me, I can just tune everything out and become the characters and decide how the story's going to go.
Exactly. You get to change the outcome. And I think that's something people don't realize. Like when you're writing nonfiction, the outcome is the outcome. Positive or negative, it's how it happens. So that's what you write. In fiction, you can take that same scenario. Maybe you went through something. Like I was abused as a child. So like I use that in stories and get revenge. Like, so you can change the outcome of things if you're doing fiction, and you can't do that with nonfiction.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So you living up in the mountains of Georgia, did part of that decision also come from liking to kind of be away from the noise and the hustle and bustle for writing? Was that part of it?
I mean, in general, I'm not an extrovert. I don't like being in cities. I tend to like kind of like the simple things and really being able to isolate. So that was a big part of it, because we had lived in and around Atlanta too. And then I just ultimately wanted, and so we picked Dahlonega, which is a small town in North Georgia, but big enough that it still had things, because I had my kids and they were in junior high and high school at the time. And so I wanted them to still have access. You know, I didn't want to totally isolate them. So we picked a town that's kind of like in that, it's got a small college here and everything. So it worked out really well.
Yeah. Well, I am going to tell you, I feel the same about that. I live about 70 miles south of Savannah in a little podunk town out in the country. That's where my family is. I'm in Missouri right now helping take care of my mom. And I prefer to be alone here too. So that's another thing I like about podcasting, you know, is not having to leave the house. And I do like that wood being outside in the woods where you can just be yourself. And I think that is, I don't know how anybody would be able to write in a living in a big city, because there's so many distractions.
Right. Yeah. It's funny, as a teenager, you know, I was like, I'm going to move to New York City and be a writer. And obviously that didn't happen, because I got to be an adult and like, I don't like cities, and I would be in a cramped apartment. And you know, like, why would I say that? You know, just that fantasy. But yeah, I like, you know, like I'm a very solitary writer. If I'm going to write, I really don't want any distractions. Yep. My family now knows that. They're like, oh, mom's writing. Just stay away. I really, in order to concentrate, I really need to have silence.
Yep. I'm the same way, because once I get distracted, I lose the train of thought of the flow. Exactly. Yep. How I was writing up. And I always have to pick where I'm going to stop for the night too. You know, I just can't stop anywhere. And so that is another thing that I like about it, because it does become challenging. You have to plan these. Okay, I wrote this much. I'm going to stop here because I know when I come back to it, I can pick up from that. And I think a lot of people don't think about that. The flow of it is tough. And I don't know how you feel, but I feel compared to writing, the editing version is way harder. I have read my book so many times.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm the same. And somebody was talking today about how hard writing is. They're like, writing's not hard. To me, that's the easy part. Editing is not. And I'm like a meticulous editor. I went to the Poynter Institute and got my certification in editing because I was like, it's important that it's done right. I hate it. I mean, my family knows how miserable I am during that time because I'll just have that look on my face and they're like, you're editing. I'm like, yes.
Yeah. No, I don't like it either. Now, so what is your thoughts on how AI is kind of coming into this? Do you embrace it or do you hate it?
I don't embrace it because I am an organic writer. You know, like I'm writing from scratch, from my mind. Now, I also understand that it exists and it's here to stay. So where I'm at is we just need to regulate it. Like, it's just one of those things where it's like, people need to say if they've used AI. I believe that we should legally have that right to know if somebody used AI on something. Mm-hmm. So I really think I'm never going to choose to use it. I don't need it. Like I write, I make my own covers. I do all of that. However, I also recognize that it exists and we're not going to complain it away. We're just not. It's like it exists. So what is the real solution? And that is regulation. They shouldn't be allowed to use people's work without their permission. You know, even for training, they need to really set up like, this is what it is allowed for. This is what it's not allowed for. But really, ultimately, it should not be allowed to use anybody's work without their permission.
I agree with everything you said. I did not do my own cover. There was a soldier that I served with, and she is an amazing artist. So I paid her to do my covers, and she also does all my graphic designs for my websites and all that stuff. That's what she went to school for, and that's her expertise, and she is amazing at it. So that helps her. It helps me. It's a win-win. But I do use AI to help me with the editing process. I don't use it for any of the content. So it's my content that I would put in with AI to help me with spelling, word choice, selection, those types of things, flow, those types, you know, things like Grammarly and Chat GPT is what I use. I personally don't like the idea of using it for content. I know people that get stuck in areas will use it to give them an idea on how to get started. I don't like that. I'm not a fan of that. I think the book needs to come from you. And sure. I think they need to make it, I think in the regulation, they need to make it to where it's limited to be a tool. Because that's really what AI is good at, is for taking repetitive tasks and streamlining them to make them faster.
Sure. And that's like assisted AI versus generative AI. Generative AI is making it. Assisted is helping you use it as a tool. And again, that's, I understand that's here and that's here to stay. And that's simply, I think, really where they need to draw the line is like, the problem with generative AI is that, and it's not that it's creating something, it's that it's stealing something to create something. Yeah. And that's the problem.
Somebody put it in there. It didn't make it. It found it and learned from it. You know? Exactly. Yeah. No, I agree. And I'm punctuation. You know, the one thing my English teacher was accurate about was I would never amount to anything in English. So I'm not good with punctuation. You know, me and my wife have been together since seventh grade, and that was back in the era of passing notes back and forth. Yeah. So I would hand her a note and she would pass it back to me with a bunch of red ink all over it. She would not answer the note until I corrected everything.
That's pretty funny. And you're still together. Yeah. So that's good.
Opposites attract, you know, she was,
the straight A student and didn't want to miss a day. And I every day looked for an excuse not to go. So
yeah,
that was, that was the, well, probably why I ended up in the Army for 20 years. But
have you ever wondered how you can help out the show? Well, that is very simple. You can help us out by going to www.twodrunkdudesinagunroom.com. That is www.twodrunkdudesinagunroom.com. There's many ways that you can help us by listening to the show, supporting the show, liking, sharing, and everything else that comes along with social media. But one of our biggest goals is to help build the nonprofit Heroes Voice Media Foundation. This is a foundation that has decided to start celebrating courage and amplifying heroes. Find your voice with Heroes Voice Media Foundation.
But yeah, no, but I do. I always, even in school, I did enjoy the essay form type stuff, the research type reports. Mm-hmm. I did like doing those stuff. And I struggled then with grammar and punctuation and all that. Even in the military, there were some schools that I struggled to get into because of that same thing. So I do like the AI for that. It might be cheating, but I'm okay with
that. I don't think that's cheating, because ultimately, like, whether or not you're paying a human editor or you're using AI assisted, it's the same thing. So, like, again, there's definitely a line. People just say AI, but you can't really lump all AI in together, because Grammarly is AI. So if people are using Grammarly, they're using assisted AI, which is different than generative AI. They're not saying, write me a story about a deer in the woods. You know, they're saying, I've written this, I just need some help with the grammar. So again, I think that rather than taking that kind of knee-jerk reaction or hard stand on something, we have to say, where is it okay to use this? And then it benefits humans versus taking away work from humans.
Yep. No, I completely agree with that too. And, you know, I use Grammarly and I use Pro Writing Assistant. Those are the two that I use the most. And those are the ones I recommend. The only thing I really used, I tried to use ChatGPT at first because it was the cost. It was so much cheaper. And man, I ran into so many issues that going doing that. It wanted to change things. I mean, it would literally reword stuff that you were putting in. And I'm like, I didn't do that. That's not what I said. And now it was becoming a fiction book because it was so far off. And I would constantly have to go back and
change things back.
Change everything. Yeah. And so ChatGPT is not good for that. But I did learn for me, because I'm a beginner, it was a good place for me to have it compare my writing style to other authors' writing styles to give me an idea of who I am and what I do. And I've submitted several different, you know, chapters here and there from different things that I wrote, and just to get that idea of what kind of style I had, because I didn't know. I used everything else. I used the other two things.
Yeah. And you've got to watch it, because it may, like you were saying, it was trying to change what you were saying. You don't want it to remove your voice as an author. Yeah. Like, I'm not big on all the author rules. People always kind of talk about that. And I think a lot of literary kind of snobbery goes around, like, how you should do something. You know, I've read books from people of all places, races, abilities. And really what it comes down to in the story is, do you have a good story?
Yeah.
So maybe you write it in dialect that you're familiar with because that's where you're from. And so you're writing the story in that dialect because that's what you know. As long as it's a good story, I don't care about any of that. What I care about is, am I going to pick up a book and am I going to get sucked in? Everything else to me doesn't matter. You know, there's people that are hemming and hawing about contractions or hemming, you know, like I'm saying, like they're fighting over stupid little things when really then the writers get scared and they lose their voice. You don't want to lose your voice because that's who you are.
Yep. And that was one thing I liked about those other assistants. They gave you word choices. Right. And it allowed me to pick a word that I know I would use. Because if some of those, if I had to look up the word to see what it meant, obviously I wouldn't have used that in my life talking.
Right.
You know, I did like that function of it. So we're talking about a little bit about styles, right? what drew you to your style? Is it just how you are and how it came out, or did you kind of want to lean that way, and did it shift when you went from nonfiction to fiction?
I think that actually I always kind of had a style, because even when I wrote nonfiction, I was always writing it from the very like raw personal point of view. So this is an experience, you know, even if I interviewed other people, I try to keep it, you know, person forward, you know? And so when I went to fiction, I also am very character forward in how I write. So, you know, the characters are, there's a lot less building of worlds and scenery and, you know, flowery language, and more of like really like honest character conversations and thoughts and things like that. So I think mm-hmm. that it is me. I'm that way as a person. I don't tend to, like, I tend to just say things if it needs to be said, or, you know, if I address things, it's going to be really clear. So I wrote that way. But I also, the second reason I did that was because I don't like reading books that are really flowery or get into a lot of description or things like that. I really want to get into a book and like get into it, get into the action, get into the story, get to know the characters. And so I wrote what I like as well.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think that's a great, you know, and sometimes your style can be your worst enemy. Because I am kind of on the other side of that. I like to be very descriptive. I like, and maybe that's just the military background where I want to know my surroundings. Where's my escape routes? Where can I go and what can I do? And I found myself, even in my fiction book, when I was writing, you know, down to describing the posture that people were standing. And I was getting to the point where I was too descriptive and the way I wrote was becoming a hindrance versus a positive, because I was going to lose readers.
Right.
And if you've got 4 pages talking about, like you said, the scenery and the dirt on your car and what kind of boots he's wearing and all those types of things, people are going to get tired. And
they do. But, you know, there's always readers that do like that too. I mean, Stephen King has a huge following. He is the most freaking descriptive writer. Like, I have a hard time with this stuff, because I'm like, dude, I know what the fence looks like now. Can we please move on? You know, like, but he has a huge following. So I think there's readers of all types. Some want more description. I've been criticized. I have people that love my style of writing, and people say, well, oh, I feel like she could have dug in more on this. And yeah, that's just not how I write. So, like, again, you'll find your readers and they'll find you.
I completely agree. Well, let me ask you this. With all the books that you wrote on the fiction side, which book are you most passionate about? What is that one book you were like, oh, I love this?
That's such a hard question. And I'm sure as a writer, you understand this. Like, it's like saying what's your favorite child. You know, there's aspects of each book. Like this last book, I really challenged myself to write it. Like, I had to think differently than I had previously, because mm-hmm. a large part of the story takes place with this guy going through the woods, hunting this creature, but somehow he ended up with a small child with him who is nonverbal. So like, he can't have conversations with the child. He can't have conversations with the creature. It's just him in the woods. And so I had to really be creative about how do I keep the reader engaged to know what's going on while not rushing through the story. And so I was really proud of that one. That was By the Dimming Light. Cause that one at the end, I was like, I did it. Like, I actually managed to create, I think, a captivating story where in a large part of it, there's one character, you know, okay, and his guilt and like him going through stuff, him trying to communicate with his child, him, you know, whatever it is. And so like, I was really proud of that, because I didn't know if, like, there was about halfway through the book, I thought, I don't know if I'm going to be able to pull this off. You know, like, this is going to be really tough. And then like, I have a book that I used a lot of my childhood in, my book, In Dreams We Fly, which came out earlier this year. You know, like I said, I didn't have a great childhood. My mother died from cancer when I was 11. I was shuffled around to different homes, and people clearly didn't want my brother and I. Like, felt obligated. So we lived in a few different homes, and I moved out on my own when I was 16 because of abuse. So like, I really wanted to kind of touch on what it's like to be a child where you're never in charge of any of your decisions. Like, the world around you is telling you all the time what you need to do. And so that little girl in that story goes through a similar, her mother passes away and she moves to North Carolina to live with an aunt and a cousin. Aunt's boyfriend lives there, and there's just some weird stuff going on. She ends up running one day after skating. Her aunt's boyfriend shows up to pick her up. She doesn't want to go with him, so she runs. She ends up seeing somebody dump a body in the woods, and convinced they're going to come after her, she runs deeper into the woods and gets lost. she comes upon a shack, and in the shack there's a latch, and she lifts it, and it ends up having a tunnel to 1929. So this is 1979. It has a tunnel to 1929. Wow. She's also biracial in the South. So going back in the past obviously has its own issues. So yeah. I started with a lot of my experiences as a child, but then I wove in a whole story as well that was separate yeah. from them.
Yeah, I didn't see the 1929 thing coming. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I really would. I watch so many like YouTube videos and stuff on time travel and parallel universes and the Mandela effect. I'm like, I really could talk about that for hours now because I wanted to use it within the story.
Yeah. No, I do the same thing, you know, even with my characters. I want that realism. So I do research, you know, Arabic names and what's common, what's uncommon, what do they mean, you know, so that I can make sure that the personality kind of affects, you know, reflects the name. And I think that's important as well. Again, and having your voice, because I think at the end of the day, what makes the indie people so different than what it used to be in that industry is the fact that they're authentic. What you see is what you're getting. And for sure. I tell people that with podcasting all the time, you know, if you make a little mistake, don't edit it, leave it. That's what people want to see. They'll know that it's real. That is right. You. None yeah. of us are, you know, if you want that perfect life, just have a Facebook page, you know, then everybody's perfect and life's always great.
Right.
You know, but,
well, and it's interesting. I would say it's interesting because like I read a lot and I read traditional books as well. I work at a library. So I read traditional books. I read a lot of indie books. And the one thing I have found with traditional books lately, and I'm not saying this for all time, I'm saying really probably in the last probably 5 years, is that it almost seems like they're selling you the cover and an idea and don't give a crap about what's inside the book. Because I look at this book, like, that sounds really good. The you know, plot sounds really good. I'm going to read this. And then, like, there was no, like, the editing isn't great. The flow isn't great. You know, they're telling, not showing, you know, like, all kinds of stuff. And it's like, I think that, like, when you look at an indie person, they're trying to get you to buy their book. Like, they want you to read it. They want you to review it. I think a major, you know, publishing house is trying to just get you buy the book because it's money. They don't care if you don't finish it. You know, if you think it's terrible. I mean, I've been a part of book clubs where like we're reading a bestseller and it's like the worst thing I've ever read. You know, like how is this a bestseller? But the cover is beautiful and the premise sounds good. That's all they care about because it puts it in your hands. You give them their money, they can walk away. But as indies, we really believe in what we're doing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I don't, you know, I have a full-time job, so I don't plan on becoming an author and making a living from it. Part of writing that book was because my daughter told me that she wanted me to publish it. And so then I had to go back and start putting in details. Cause what I originally wrote that book for was for my family, to give them an explanation of what I went through. Cause I never talked about it. And all they seen was the changes. They didn't see what brought these changes on. So I wanted them to at least know my side of the story, what happened. It wasn't an apology. I didn't mean it to be a conversation. I wanted to do it on paper so that I could just say it and use the words I wanted to use and not make it a discussion and turn it into something else. And so after I gave that to my family, then my daughter wanted me to publish it. And well, then I had to go back and put all these details because I didn't have to explain Germany because she was in Germany. She knew what Germany was and where we lived and what the house looked like. And so then I had to go back and put all these details in it. And that's where I kind of started getting interested in it. And then with this third part of the nonprofit that I have, I wanted to go through the publishing process myself so I could help other veterans at least talk semi-educated about it. And I feel that it's important to walk down those avenues before you try to lead other people down them. And I think some great things has came from this. I've met some, like yourself, some great writers. And I always invite all of them to, if they ever wanted to give a webinar to any of our veterans on writing styles or editing process or any of that stuff, I will set it up because That's part of what the nonprofit does, is our, we're trying to help promote veterans that put their dreams on hold to serve the country and are now trying to live out those dreams. Whether we have a radio station for musicians, a podcasting network with a TV channel for podcasters, and we've got now this Words from Warriors program for authors. It just started about a month ago. So
that's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I like it, man, because you get to celebrate the wins versus the negative. You know, you're now on the other side of people that have fought these demons and came out the other side, and now we're celebrating wins and getting you back to doing what you were passionate about.
Exactly. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. So why don't I'm going to go ahead and give you the opportunity to bring you forward and tell everybody where they can find your books. If you've got a place that they can get some autographed books and all that stuff. So I will bring you forward and give you a chance to tell everybody. I've had your website going down here at the bottom. So if there's any other places, feel free to give yourself a plug and tell everybody about it.
Awesome. Yeah. So my website, authorjulietrose.com, is my personal website that also has all my social media, has emails. I've always said this, if somebody needs to reach out or wants to reach out, feel free. I might not get back to you right away, but I'll get back to you, you know, to have those conversations. We actually, once I had published my books, then I really wanted to help other people get their voices out there. So I started a publishing company, Above the Ring Collective. And we have our first anthology coming out in May, which is 14 authors' stories. And it's a horror speculative anthology. I also published another author's book, which is folklore. It takes place in North Georgia, called The Nomad. I just published that back in January. So I'm kind of moving that direction too. It's kind of like you. I want to help other people achieve their dreams, and not everybody is as comfortable or understands kind of like that process flow. So I'm really working on maybe even adding in some kind of trainings, talking about how to publish, the things to watch out for, the things to look at, you know, pros and cons. And so if anybody wants to reach out to me, by all means, either site will come directly to me. So abovetheringcollective.com or my website, authorjulietrose.com. I have a way to connect on both of those.
All right. I will probably definitely be hitting you up, because I think you've got a lot of knowledge that these veterans could really pull from. And I'm very passionate about this, because I think, as we've seen now recently, I don't know what they're going to talk about in the history books about our war 40, 50 years from now. And right. So I want all of our veterans that served to take the time to document their experiences, no matter how unexciting it was at that time. Maybe they didn't do anything, but I want everybody to take that moment and make it out there. So 50 years from now, when somebody's doing a book report on it, they might be able to find videos or writings from people that was there and seen it and was able to talk about it because they were self-published, or they did their own podcast where they didn't have somebody, you know, critiquing how they said it and what they said. And that's what I think is extremely important. So
absolutely.
I would definitely love to have you.
Thinking about like that, if you look at even the Vietnam War, like, we really came to understand that experience when people started being able to speak about it that had been there. Yep. And it gave us a much clearer picture of what really happened during that time. You know, and then in turn, we were able to then support Vietnam veterans because we knew their stories. We knew that these were just kids, you know, that type of stuff. Yeah. So we were able to say, hey, you need more support. I'd love to do a webinar. I mean, this is something that, you know, I've done for a few years now, and I've learned what does work and what doesn't work. I'm a big believer in voice. And I think that's, like I said, the authenticity of the story is the most important thing you'll ever do. And I think that's really what I'd love to talk to people about, especially veterans, is authenticity and their voice. Because I feel like, okay, I mean, you're military, my ex-husband was military, I came from a military family. One thing I did see is that quite often your voice was not to be used. You were supposed to use the voice, not your voice. And so it's hard to break out of that cycle in your mind when you say, wait, I have my own voice to like tell my story the way I want to tell it. And I would love to do that.
Oh, absolutely. I'll reach out to you and we'll get it set up. Well, I will go and put you in the green room. I appreciate you coming on, man. I had a great time. I could talk about this for hours and hours. But I'm going to go ahead and throw the exit video up and I'll be right with you. Okay.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks again. And that's exactly what I've always said. The voice is extremely important. I've wanted all the veterans out there to tell their story, how they see it, and let other people know from people that actually experienced it. I hope you all enjoyed this episode because I know I did. The fact and the knowledge about writing styles and how she pulled life experiences into her stories, I think is absolutely amazing. So I want you guys to go on down, go to her website. I've been there. I've looked at it. It's a very nice website. All of her books is there. She's got a lot of information on it. So go check it out. I will make sure that all the links are posted. So if you didn't get it wrote down, no big deal. I'll have all the links for you to click on it and make it easy for you. I hope y'all liked it. I hope y'all enjoy the show. I thank all of y'all for coming. Y'all take care. And as always, don't let the day kick your ass. Kick its ass.